House Street by R.F. Delafield. Adapted for radio by Cynthia Pugh. The Spinster of South Street.
Yes, madam?
Ah, Temperance. Is my niece asleep?
Oh, no, Mrs. Smith. Dr. Sutherland's in there reading a booklet to her.
What sort of booklet?
Oh, something about dysentery, ma'am.
Oh, that fool of a doctor. What good will he ever do her?
Oh, it isn't Dr. Sutherland's fault, ma'am. She threatened to get out of bed and fetch it if he wouldn't read it to her. Oh, she has been difficult today. Don't you think another doctor...
Oh, what doctor exists that couldn't be coiled round her little finger in 2 minutes? No, Sutherland's the best of a bad job. At least he's one of us and in a position to shout at her. Take that tray away.
Yes,
and then help me to tidy the room. It doesn't fit to receive cannibals, let alone cabinet ministers.
Yes, ma'am.
Comparative statistics of adult mortality in the West Riding. 15% industrial workers never reach age of 37. 37. I wonder if she'll get that far herself. Ah, Dr. Sutherland.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Smith.
How is she?
About the same. I had to read a chapter of Oriental Epidemics before she'd even promised to rest.
Oh, we can't let her burn herself out like this.
Sometimes I wonder whether she'll burn us out first.
Ever since she returned from the Crimea, she's been goading herself along the road to complete collapse. She can't go on indefinitely.
That's what I used to say at Scutari. I remember coming ashore dog-tired and getting my first glimpse of her. She was helping one of the butchers perform an amputation. I had a physical shock when I saw her face. It was a living death's head. 6 hours later, I took some letters into her office. She'd been writing reports, 12 foolscap pages of them. I said to myself, she can't last a week. And that was over 2 years ago. Hello, here's Sydney Herbert's carriage.
She ought to have had a long holiday immediately she returned. Instead of that, she posts off to Scotland to plague the Queen and Lord Panmure into starting a royal commission.
She says the public are behind her now. In 6 months, they'd forget her.
Fiddlesticks, they won't ever forget her.
No, but I see what she means. Public opinion is her deadliest weapon, and time blunts it all too quickly.
Dr. Sutherland, I believe you encourage her obstinacy.
She doesn't need any encouragement, Mrs. Smith. I'm thinking she's the most pig-headed female God's made since he salted Lot's wife.
Lord Herbert is below, ma'am.
Very well, show him up. No. Tidy up these papers. I'll bring him up here myself.
Oh, here, Temperance, you've dropped one. Oh, what is it? Ground plan of proposed military hospital at Netley. Interested in hospitals, Temperance?
No, sir. No, not really. They're made for so much untidiness.
By George, you're right. Besides, they stink.
Not Miss Nightingale's hospital, sir.
Oh, yes, Temperance. Even Miss Nightingale's. For the first day or two. Don't want to be a nurse, I suppose.
Lord, no, sir. I faint at the sight of blood.
I expect Miss Nightingale did, until she saw it in Torrance.
Oh, no, sir. Miss Nightingale wouldn't faint. She's a lady. Besides, she's different.
Different? Aye, that's it. Different.
Come in, Sydney.
Ah, John, delighted to see you.
And I, you, Sydney. Welcome to the little war cabinet.
Is that what they call us?
Not us, Sydney. We are only orderlies. Is the Secretary for War really coming?
Ultimately. Today he's sending Dr. Andrew Smith, Chief of the Army Medical Department. Smith is to discuss the agenda for next week's committee meeting.
How does she do it? A woman, not even married, a permanent invalid, apparently dying. Yet she makes the most pig-headed old buffers in British politics dance attendance on her.
I hope they know Florence won't be present at the preliminary discussion.
But surely there's no point in the meeting if Florence doesn't attend.
I think there is. We'll get far more out of the Army Medical Department if they know there's a door between her and the conference. And what's a door to the Lady General? Tell me, Sidney, you knew her as a girl. Was she quite such a dragon then?
Bless you, no. The power was there, the intensity. But they did something to her out there, John. She came back from Scutari tempered. Clear-thinking, qualified in every way, but somehow so ruthless, ice-cold, bitter.
You can't watch men die from sheer departmental inefficiency and hang on to your old standard of values, Sidney.
You did, John.
I'm an old guest of death. She was late at the feast. Hello, here's Clough.
Good afternoon, Lord Herbert.
Good day to you, Arthur. You look tired.
I am tired. Dog tired. I didn't get to bed until 3 a.m. and I was up at 6:30 getting ready for today.
What kept you up that late?
She did. Couldn't sleep herself and didn't see why he should.
Write any verses these days, Arthur?
Never.
You ought to scoop a hole in the day somewhere. You'll be getting rusty.
I am rusty, Lord Herbert. When I try and write, I creak. The first line seemed good, and then it tails off into mere jingles.
Come now, Arthur, that's nonsense. Why, even Fleur admits you're a fine poet.
He might have been if she hadn't laid hands on him. If you work with her, you gallop at her pace, not your own. She's in that room now, making a statistical table on the causes of death among the native populations of Bombay and Madras.
You oughtn't to let her work now, John.
You try and stop her.
Use your authority. Put her under some sort of restraint.
Restraint? The only thing that would restrain her is a straitjacket. And even then she'd begin investigating the sanitary conditions of asylums.
But if she were to die...
Don't say that. We should all be back at the starting point in 24 hours.
She knows that better than any of us, but try and drive it home to her. She'll tell you that her ill health is the reason for this urgency.
Does she contemplate the possibility of death? Soon?
Not really, no. When I threatened her yesterday, she said she'd outlive us all by 30 years.
And your opinion as a medical man? Honestly, now.
Physically, she should have died in the Crimea. And several times since. But she seems to live on nervous energy. And there are no limits to her reserves. Sometimes I think she'll pass away in her sleep. Other times I think she isn't ill at all.
Not ill? Come now, John.
Not ill at all, just masquerading in order to get more privacy.
She doesn't only use her own vitality. She draws on others, Lord Herbert.
Why, bless you, Arthur, she isn't a vampire.
Not a vampire. Then why do I come out of that room of hers feeling as though I'd given a pint of blood and a year of my life at each session? How is it that I can't write about anything except septic tanks and sewers and death rates and plague since I first surrendered? What's happened to my conception of art, beauty, and literature? Why do I despise myself for ever wanting to translate these things in terms of words alone?
If you have a mission of that nature, Arthur, I'm not at all sure you shouldn't leave us and fulfill it.
Ah, that's the rub, Lord Herbert. I haven't such a mission any longer. She took charge of it and substituted sordid reality for beautiful dreams. New lamps for old. Hygiene for the Hesperides.
She put pity in place of it. Don't forget that, Arthur.
There are cherries outside now. Temperance.
It'll be Dr. Smith.
Did you call me, ma'am?
Through the gentleman upstairs. Leave his cloak in the lobby.
Yeah, very good, ma'am.
I could still tell him Florence is too ill to be disturbed.
She won't be disturbed, I promise you.
Thank you, Lord Herbert. I can trust you.
In here, sir.
Well, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Dr. Smith, this is uncommonly good of you. Dr. Sutherland, you met, of course.
Yes,
how do you do, Sutherland?
Mr. Arthur Clough, Miss Nightingale's secretary.
How do you do?
We may as well be seated, gentlemen. Dr. Smith, will you sit here next to me?
Thank you. Sutherland, we haven't seen you at Whitehall in months. Where do you hibernate these days?
In here, mostly. Haven't had a minute's freedom since my lord here sent me to that infernal Turkish abattoir. Miss Nightingale sees to that.
I hear the good lady's been indefatigable. You mustn't put too great a strain on her, you know. We never know when there's another Crimea around the corner.
Miss Nightingale is gravely indisposed, Dr. Smith.
I'm sorry to hear it. Am I to understand that she cannot attend today?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, then an indefinite postponement would be the best thing...
Miss Nightingale would, I feel certain, be greatly opposed to any further delay. We have all the necessary data for the discussion of the principal problem.
I see no reason why we shouldn't proceed with preliminaries. What do you say, Smith?
As you wish. There's no harm in mere discussion.
Good. Well, you are aware, of course, that on her return, Miss Nightingale approached the Secretary for War with a request for some sort of commission to determine how to reform military nursing based on her observations in the Crimea.
Reform it?
Everyone associated with nursing the sick and wounded in the Crimea came home determined to expose certain lamentable inadequacies in our present system.
Lord Herbert, gentlemen, let there be no misunderstanding. As chief of the military medical department, I must tell you that I and my colleagues resent the implication that the system needs shielding from the light of public investigation.
Dr. Smith, it must be clear, even in Whitehall, that the system needs dragging into the open by its ears that Britain might see what a monstrously evil thing it really is.
Dr. Sutherland, I object to that statement. As chief...
Gentlemen, please, let us have done with recriminations and learn from the mistakes of the past. Miss Nightingale has already been promised a royal commission.
In principle. But we've no intention of conducting a public inquest on governmental errors, which must inevitably occur when an empire of this size goes to war.
Precisely. What we are here to determine is the personnel of the Board of Inquiry. And Mr. Clough has a list of Miss Nightingale's nominees.
Her nominees are Dr. William Farr, General Stork, Mr. Augustus Stafford, and Dr. John Sutherland.
But I was given to understand that the commission was to consist of army medical men only. Dr. Sutherland's services as a sanitary expert are widely known, but his official and medical experience hardly justifies inclusion on a body of this importance.
Miss Nightingale feels that medical and sanitary problems are closely interlocked.
Oh, this is quite ridiculous. If this is to be an inquiry at all, we feel that the board must be exclusively composed of permanent members of the military medical staff.
But those are the very people who stop at nothing to mask the true facts, Dr. Smith.
Dr. Sutherland, I must bitterly resent the implication behind that remark.
Of course you do, Dr. Smith. Because it is the very beginning of the truth.
Promise,
this is gross disobedience.
Go away, both of you. I'm not going to let a door stand between me and my plans.
Whatever Miss Nightingale may say to the contrary, it must be obvious that she's in no condition to discuss these projects. Later, perhaps...
Later, always later. That's what they said in Scutari when I asked for necessities. All in good time, Miss Nightingale. But men didn't die in good time. They died all the time. Every minute of the night and day, when a word from some stupid ape in Whitehall could have saved the lives of 80%. Do you know what I call that? Murder. And premeditated murder. Inasmuch as the officials responsible could not be such fools as to be unaware of the consequences of their folly.
Perhaps we could revert to what we were discussing before Miss Nightingale came in. Nominees for the Board of Inquiry. So far, none of us is clear as regards the functions of this inquiry.
I am quite clear. And have gone so far as to tabulate the remedy.
Oh, come, my dear lady. You don't decide to hang a man before he's been found guilty.
Frankly, Dr. Smith, I would cheerfully hang every hide-bound official who stood between me and immediate reform in this matter.
Florence, please.
The commission will recommend the election of four subcommittees.
Four subcommittees?
A. A committee to put Imperial barracks in a sanitary condition. B. A committee to organize a statistical department within the Army Medical Service. C, a committee to establish an Army Medical School, and D, a committee to revise the Army Medical Department from top to bottom.
I'll have no hand in this preposterous and mischievous design.
You may do as you wish, Dr. Smith. But I shall remind you that I have obtained the earnest support of Her Majesty and the Prince Consort.
At this stage, Florence, we must agree to compromise.
There can be no compromise. Either the commission is set up on this basis, or... I shall publish my diary, which will, I don't doubt, bring the entire government about your department's ears.
This is fantastic. A department of Her Majesty's services being threatened like a common malefactor? Miss Nightingale, I beg you to excuse me. Perhaps when you are in a less agitated frame of mind...
I shall never be calmer than I am today, Dr. Smith, and never more determined.
Am I to understand that you, too, hold these extreme views, my lord?
My views in this are identical with those of Miss Nightingale, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Sidney.
I'm sorry. Good day, Miss Nightingale.
I'll see you downstairs.
Arthur, make a précis of the discussion, will you? Have it ready tonight.
Very well, Clara.
Oh, dear.
Florence, you've overtaxed your strength. All right, my dear. I got you. Lie down here on the divan. That's right.
I'm so sorry. It was a sudden weakness. I'm better now.
Florence, you've got a devil in your heart.
A devil? Perhaps, Sidney. But God put it there.
Here's another report, Doctor. One we missed.
What's the journal?
One of the new fashion papers. The Distaff Sun.
Oh, good heavens.
Came out early last week. Look, July 1857.
Go on, Aunt May. Read it.
Miss Nightingale did not appear in any way overawed by the majesty of the proceedings, and appeared also to be quite unconscious of the fact that she was the first member of the weaker sex, weaker indeed, to take an active part in the inquiry. This in a woman of lesser...
Well, go on.
Then it gives a full description of what she wore.
What she what?
Wore. Clothes, you old buffer.
What the devil's that got to do with it?
The people who read this sort of paper will positively revel in the description.
And it's an awful pity I didn't give my evidence in the kilt.
What else does it say?
Ah, deportment.
Aye?
Her deportment was exemplary. Supremely self-possessed, she was in no way unbecoming to her sex. Speaking in well-modulated, gentle tones, which made the maximum impression on all present, she presented facts gleaned in the harrowing field of experience, and having presented them, one felt she was confident to leave her assembly to the wider judgment of the men.
Have the goodness to burn that rubbish, John Sutherland.
Burn it? Not I. If you don't appreciate its true value, I do.
And what, pray, is the value of a spurious piece of nonsense like that?
The French have a word for it, Florence. Camouflage.
Camouflage, John. Please explain.
However much you may object, Florence, in the England of today, you will get further in the role of tender, submissive, inspired little woman than you can ever hope to get as an Amazon. Amazon's hoydens, if you like, are not fashionable. This is still outwardly a man's world.
That's good advice, John. Thank you. Why are you holding your head like that, Arthur?
It's my eyes, Florence. When employed on close work, they ache horribly.
Indeed. We must get you spectacles. Hurry up with those proofs. I shall need them for Lord Herbert's inaugural committee meetings.
Very well.
Did you call on your mamma, Florence?
No, I did not. Social calls must wait. I did, however, get all the information I required.
On the infirmary?
Infirmary? Oh, fiddlesticks. That paper's already at the printer.
Oh.
When did you correct the proofs?
Last night, of course.
Florence, that must have occupied you 3 hours.
1 hour and 3 quarters. There's nothing wrong with my eyes.
But I forbade you to...
Here are the final plans of the military hospital Netley on Southampton Water.
By George, that's splendid.
Judge for yourself whether they're splendid or not. If a building is erected on that plan, it would be Scutari in Hampshire. The fools. What have they learned? Sick and convalescent rooms without any more ventilation than a dungeon, and every patient's window facing northeast.
Hmm. These plans are passed, and the work's in hand. What can we do now?
The Prime Minister shall tell us that.
You'll be lucky if you get an appointment with Pam. His government's tottering, and he's got bigger fish to fry.
Sidney is bringing him here within the next half hour.
Lord Palmerston coming here?
Why not?
But he's the Prime Minister.
And if the care of the military sick is not the concern of the Prime Minister, aren't they? I should like to know whose business it is.
Very idea.
Now stop dithering, woman. Go and make yourself presentable for Pam.
I'm not going to receive him.
John and I will receive him. Arthur, take your work into the annex. Aunt May shall read out to you. You'll write more quickly.
Very well, Florence.
Good gracious, I almost forgot. There's a young woman downstairs waiting to see you.
I won't see anyone without an appointment. Let her write like everyone else.
She has written. You tore up her letter.
She's called 11 times in 5 days.
Oh, yes, I remember. A stupid notion to become a nurse.
You had just such a stupid notion yourself not 100 years ago, Florence.
I did, John Sutherland. But before I began to pester busy people, I trained in the profession to a certain degree of proficiency. Moreover, I prayed to God every night for guidance.
Perhaps this young woman has done these things.
Nonsense. I passed her in the hall. She was far too fashionably dressed to have prayed for anything but a handsome husband. Send her away, please, Aunt May.
All right, I will.
Poor Aunt May, you bully her unmercifully.
When she needs it, she'd let any stage-struck hussy in here. Now I must pretty myself for the part, John.
Ah, me. I sometimes say to myself, John Sutherland, how does it come that you submit to petticoat government half a century before your fellow countrymen?
Dear John, you're a real help, you and Sydney.
Aye, but I sometimes feel a bit worried over Sydney. He's looking very pale and sickly these days.
Nonsense. All Englishmen with incomes over 2,000 a year have pale complexions. It's a statistical fact.
I'll not argue about statistics with you, Flo. You've too big a start on a man. I'll away and help Arthur until Pam shows up.
Very well, John. I'll send Temperance for you when he arrives.
Well, I'm in. Where is she, I wonder? Oh, dear, I wish I weren't so nervous. Pull yourself together, Margaret Douglas. She can't eat you. Oh.
How did you get in here? Who are you?
Please, I beg of you, give me 2 minutes before you put me out.
Come over here.
No, come on. I won't eat you, child.
Oh, Miss Nightingale,
Yes, I know. You want to be a nurse and watch by the bedside of shattered young heroes. Oh, I can guess the reason. Your ego, diverted by some trifling incident, a tiff with Papa, a lover's quarrel perhaps, is taking an unconventional course, which happens to present itself in nursing simply because nursing is getting a good deal of sentimental publicity just now. What do the women of Britain take me for? An imperial safety valve? No. Sit down. You have a letter of recommendation, I believe.
From General Stork. Here it is.
Of good family, sound physique, inspired by your work in the Crimea, and so on and so on. Do you know what is expected of a nurse, young woman?
I want to begin at the beginning, Miss Nightingale.
You could hardly begin anywhere else. What facilities have I got for training in this Augean stables of an empire?
Well, they told me you were contemplating a school of nurses at St. Thomas's Hospital.
And supposing I am? How long would a woman of your milieu stand the rigors of such an exacting life?
Well, General Stork led me to believe you preferred women of good family, Miss Nightingale.
Yes. Providing they dedicate their lives to the work in the same spirit of resolve and renunciation one expects of a nun taking final vows. And providing they have nothing in their past or present to distract their purpose. Can this be said of you?
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
You have no attachments, no desire for marriage, children?
No, Miss Nightingale, none.
None now? What of the past?
It's all behind me.
Aha! I was right. Miss Douglas, you have a broken heart. We cannot place confidence in broken hearts. They mend too quickly.
I had plans for a marriage, but I renounced them. Voluntarily. There was no quarrel, no obstacle, nothing to prevent a secure and conventional alliance. I put it aside. I defied my parents, my friends, my fiancé. I did it because I knew about you.
Don't imagine I can't understand, child. I was 34 before I screwed up courage to fly in the face of convention. But I did it with my eyes wide open. I studied nursing in secret for years.
You would find me equally indefatigable, Miss Nightingale.
Yes, the spirit is willing enough, I can see that. But there's more required of the flesh than even an enthusiast could dream. Could you empty the slops of 500 verminous men every day for 6 months? Could you distract a man's attention while a surgeon sawed through the shattered bone of his leg? These are some of the things we nurses have to do. It's no life for a weakling.
If I were a weakling, I should never have got so far as this room.
No. No, that's true. Leave your address with my secretary, Mr. Clough, on the way down. I'll write to you when to report to St. Thomas's. In the meantime, study this handbook. Know it by heart by the time we meet again.
Oh, Miss Nightingale, you'll never regret it.
I hope not. The rest depends on yourself.
You rang me?
Yes, Temperance. Show this young lady downstairs.
Goodbye, Miss Nightingale.
Goodbye. Oh, Temperance.
Yes, miss?
Send for the carpenters and have them fit a lock on the back stairs door. The public are beginning to mistake this room for a museum.
Oh, well, very good, miss.
Who was that?
A very practical dreamer, John.
I see. I came up to tell you I saw Sydney and Pam arrive. They'll be here in a moment. Do you mind if I stay?
I should like a word or two with Pam alone. Give Sydney the hint.
Another little plot?
No, no, John, nothing to be ashamed of. But Sydney won't canvass. He's too proud or too timid. So I must do it for him. Besides, I can't act in front of Sydney.
Aye. The Lord was having a nap when he let Sydney Herbert wed anyone but you.
Dr. Sutherland, how dare you say such?
Oh, excuse me, miss, but Lord Herbert is here with another gentleman. He said to tell you it's the Prime Minister.
Show them in, Temperance. Lord Herbert is telling the truth. Never say that again, John. Never, never.
Forget it. I'm an old fool. Maybe the thought's been there too long.
Bury it. Kill it. Now, here. What a weapon it would make for our enemies. It's a fantastic notion. Quite fantastic.
Lord Palmerston, miss, and Lord Herbert.
This is a great honor, my lord.
Come, Florence. Keep the poses for the unconquered. It is from me that the curtsy should come. My heartiest congratulations, my dear. I intend to kiss you.
Sydney. Yes, John. She wants a word with him alone.
I see. Well, I'll do what I can. That report of yours is the finest thing of its kind we've ever had.
Yes, it's a fine report, my lord.
It is indeed. I suppose you know you sent all the army doctors into hiding, young lady.
I did hear it whispered that some of them were suffering from gout, my lord.
Is that what they call it? I must remember the malady when my government is forced out of office. Seriously, though, Florence, your commission has stirred a hornet's nest in Whitehall. Why, even the clerks are plucking up sufficient courage to ask for a new quill when there's at least a week's wear left in the old one. And now, I believe, you intend taking a holiday.
That, my lord, depends on you.
On me? Herbert, old fellow, will you explain?
Florence will do her own explaining, my lord. I'll leave you to her. Come, Sutherland.
What thunderbolt may we expect now, Florence?
I wanted you to have a look at this plan, my lord.
Oh, Netley Hospital. Ha-ha, well, I'm ahead of you. Work is about to begin on the building. We have learned some of your Napoleonic tactics, Florence.
My lord, in this case, I urge caution rather than speed.
Caution? You?
This entire plan is outmoded. We have alternative plans, superior in every respect.
Oh, maybe, but this is a War Office concern, and you are still officially unrecognized in every sphere but nursing.
Is a hospital outside the sphere of nursing? As it stands, this building is more the concern of the prison commission. My lord, it was you who prevailed upon Papa to give me my initial opening. Tell me, have I not justified that faith?
No man ever saw a richer or a quicker return on an investment, Florence.
Then I beseech you now, exert your powerful influence to stop work on Netley until we have rallied sufficient support to establish our alternative plan.
Yes, you're asking a great deal, Florence. The work is so far forward. Estimates, contracts.
I know it, and I do so without apologies.
You're quite sure of your views in this matter?
Utterly, utterly sure.
Oh, very well. Work shall not begin for 6 months.
Oh, my lord. Have we your pledge?
You have my pledge.
Thank God. Now I can rest.
Well, you understand, of course, that no word of this gets abroad.
Discretion was one of our earliest lessons, my lord.
This is strictly unorthodox, of course. I shouldn't even be here talking to you.
Unorthodoxy is the hallmark of true greatness. You have given posterity one more proof of your statesmanship.
Oh,
and tonight I shall thank my maker that Lord Palmerston was Prime Minister when he, who is aware of all, summoned me to the task.
From anyone else, that would have sounded sanctimonious. coming from you, I cannot conceive a greater compliment. You've made me proud, Florence. Proud of my judgment and proud to help. Well, I must go. So much to do. Goodbye, child. Don't trouble to ring. I'll find my way down.
Pam?
Yes?
You aren't really on my side, you know. I'm an outsider at Whitehall, even to you.
You're a woman, Florence. Got to resist that, you know. But I'm not on their side either. I like your tactics. I learn a good deal from them.
And the Netley project. You won't go away and forget us.
I gave you my word, didn't I? You can ask anyone on the continent whether I'm in the habit of breaking it. Good day to you.
Dear Pam. Oh, there you are, Sidney. Well, I played him and landed him. We have 6 months' grace. Well, show a little pleasure. Congratulate me. What is it, Sidney?
Why did you persuade John Sutherland to get me out of the way while the PM was here?
Oh, that. Oh, come, Sidney, don't behave like a petulant schoolboy.
I should like to know, Florence.
Very well, I'll tell you. It was because Pam's a big collie who goes through the hoops much better if he thinks he's the only dog in the ring.
Sometimes I think you would get more done on your own.
Sidney, this is ridiculous. Don't you see? Pam's business here was strictly unofficial. He could never have been won over in the presence of another public figure. You know my methods.
I can't always approve of your methods, Florence.
Because they are not in keeping with the accepted codes of behavior for a gently born woman, I suppose.
No, not just that. Because backstairs politics have a habit of recoiling unexpectedly. It's sometimes better to work in the open. At least you know what you're up against.
Come out into the open yourself, Sidney Herbert. This is a smokescreen to cover wounded vanity.
No.
Then why this carping?
I hate to see you playing charades with a man. It isn't worthy of you, Flo. Why don't you go on being yourself like you were with the medical board? There was fire, spirit, nobility. So much better than the donning of these excessive masks for one-man audiences.
They are part of the play, Sidney. Believe me, I know what I'm about. I have to pretend to let men take the reins. Sutherland understands and approves.
To John Sutherland, you're a brilliant commander-in-chief. To me, you're a woman, Florence.
You see so much more than the others. To be truthful, that's why I saw Pam alone. I can't act when you're watching the play.
I see.
Don't change, will you, Sidney?
I'll always be the woman of our partnership, Florence.
What does it matter? We both know we shall arrive with a roll of drums that will echo around the world. Believe it, Sidney. We are the vanguard of progress, order, real civilization. And God's purpose is working through us.
Dear Flo, why did God surround you by such little people?
Village.
Thank you, Mom.
Just wait here for a moment and I'll see if Miss Nightingale's in the annex. I can't imagine where that fuzzy Temperance has gone. She should have shown you up.
Temperance? The little maid with the pearl teeth? Here?
Yes, Temperance, the little maid with the... Peter Grillage, you rascal! And Temperance! God bless her soul, I'm beginning to understand. No wonder she left me to answer the door. Temperance and a foreigner. Huh. Just wait until Miss Nightingale hears about this. She'll pearly teeth the pair of you, I can assure you. Temperance, touch her.
I'll be back in a moment, Miss Florence. Did you call Mrs. Smith, Mum? Snuddy?
No, but I am. Oh, my little Temperance.
How dare you kiss me? How dare you?
Miss Party, she sent me. She say, Peter tell Miss Florence I buy at shop. I know I see you if I come. So I report it all the way. Oh, Temperance.
Peter, you mustn't kiss me. You are not here anyway. Look, Miss Florence is in there dressing.
Then you whisper.
Oh, no, we don't. Now, listen, Peter. I mustn't stay here. Look, if Miss Florence caught me with you, I'd get dismissed. And die of shame into the bargain. Now, bigger boy, you stay here. I'll tell Miss Florence you've got a message from her sister.
No. Oh. Peter not see his Temperance. Want to 3 months.
Oh, I can see you later. Any time.
You come back?
Yes, yes, I promise.
Another kiss, then I'll let you go for a little time.
Oh, very well. Hurry up, then.
What is this?
Oh, Miss Florence, Temperance, come back here at once.
Yes, miss?
Now then, will one of you have the goodness to explain this extraordinary scene?
Miss Partenomy, she sent me to say she can't.
Never mind my sister Parthenope, Peter Quillage. What relationship exists between you and my maid?
Not understand.
Come, you understand me very well. Don't pretend I wasted my time teaching you English. Has he proposed marriage to you, Temperance?
Marriage? Oh, Miss Nightingale. Oh,
come now, Temperance. From what I know of you, he certainly wouldn't have made that much progress without some sort of declaration of his intentions.
Oh, Miss Nightingale.
Oh, Miss Nightingale. It's intolerable, this mock modesty among English women of all classes. Peter Quillage, I want you to tell me the truth. You understand what I mean by truth, don't you?
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
Very well, then. Do you intend to marry Temperance Hatcher, my maid?
Peter, marry Temperance? Oh, good, good.
No, he doesn't know what he's saying.
Oh, yes, he does, and you have every intention of hearing him say it, you minx. When did this attachment first manifest itself, and why wasn't I informed immediately?
Oh, well, Miss Nightingale, it was when you went down to Embley Park in the autumn. First he wanted to learn how to speak properly. I felt sorry for him, being a stranger here and sort of tongue-tied. So I said I'd teach him, and I did try. I was foolish, I know, because he wouldn't listen to any of the proper polite talk. He kept making advances. I did try and restrain him, miss, but when I made him understand that he didn't go about it that over here and he ought to be open and honourable about it, he wanted to marry me there and then and tell you everything, seeing as how you'd adopted him and was mother and father to him. What, so to speak, miss?
That was very proper of him. Thank you, Peter. Tell me, Temperance, what prevented you from following such excellent advice?
Oh, I didn't dare, miss.
You coquette, of course you'd have dared, but you enjoyed keeping the poor boy on tenterhook. Peter, you shall marry her at once. I will arrange everything.
But I haven't even thought it over, miss.
Very well, think it over while Peter and I make the necessary arrangements. Now, where shall the ceremony be performed? Here or at Embley?
At Embley, miss. It's not a pretty church.
Very well. I'm glad about this, very glad. You'll make him a good wife, and he seems to be much in need of one.
Peter, did you understand that? Miss Nightingale says we can be married soon.
Oh, miss, I kiss your hand.
No, no, Peter, save your kisses for the bride.
Oh, God bless you, ma'am. Come on, Peter.
Oh, sorry, ma'am, monsieur. Oh, one moment, you two.
Let them go, Aunt May. They're made for one another. She'll make an Englishman of him in less than 12 months.
Then you knew about it.
I just arranged it, dear. They're going to be married at Embley.
Married? When?
How should I know? Can't they make their own plans?
They'd be the first that ever did in this household.
I can't bear untidy lives. That's why I'm approving of Parthenope's marriage when she calls here this afternoon.
Parthenope to be married as well? Dear heaven, whatever next? When? To whom and why wasn't I told?
Aunt May, don't be tiresome. Parthenope hasn't told me yet.
Then how in the world did you ferret it out?
I didn't ferret it out. Her fiancé told me himself before he proposed to her. It's a Harry Verney.
Harry? Did he come here groveling for your permission?
Of course he didn't. Formal permission was Papa's province, not mine.
Then how do you know your sister accepted him?
Well, of course she accepted him. She's older than I. And Sir Harry Verney is a man of some eminence and greatly attached to my cause.
Ah, I see your cause. What other recommendations does he possess?
He's a widower and middle-aged, but I see no reason why the match should not be quietly successful. Parthenope's carriage is here now, and may be so good as to show her up. Temperance is in no condition to receive.
Oh, why can't he lead normal lives? Why did I ever get entangled in this bedlam?
Lord Herbert sent this letter round by runner from Westminster. It's urgent.
Don't go, Arthur.
Oh. Bad news?
There's no answer. Get hold of Sutherland. Lord Herbert should be here himself soon. We meet in this room in 15 minutes.
Very well, sir.
Here's your sister.
Hello, darling.
Parthenope, my dear.
You two will have lots to talk about. I'll get tea.
No, Aunt May. It's It's very distressing. I'd set this afternoon aside for you, Parthy, but we've got an emergency cabinet meeting.
But, Flo, it seems like years.
Take tea with Aunt May, dear. Oh. I can only give you 10 minutes now. Oh, you look radiant, Parthy. Leave us, Aunt May, just for a few moments.
I'll get tea then. I've a secret, Flo. I wanted a long talk. It's a big secret. Tell me. I'm to be married to Sir Harry Verney.
I'm very happy for you, dear.
But you aren't surprised. You ought to be. You're the very first after Papa to know.
I know Sir Harry, Parthy, and I've a pair of sharp eyes. He's a very worthy man, and you'll make him a very happy one.
Oh, dear. I suppose a thing like this seems trifling enough to you. You're so deeply immersed in much bigger things.
There isn't any bigger thing than two people before God dedicating their lives to one another, Parthy.
You don't mean that, Flo.
I do mean it. What can be bigger or more natural or more hopeful than the final choice of a lifelong companion? Someone with whom to share the disappointments and battles that lie in store for all of us. What do those obstacles matter if they face two instead of one right to the very end? You two weren't thrust at one another like so many women in our position. You found one another. That's as it should be, Parthy.
The things you wanted were always so very different, Flo.
Were they?
Yes, you've never changed. With you it was always work, purpose, power. But I didn't want any of those things. Just a nice husband. Well, Flo, you went out and found your work. But a woman like me can't ask a man to marry her.
Most of the women in our class do, in a nice way, of course.
I can tell you now, Flo. I never could before.
Well, Parthy?
I was very jealous of you in the old days.
Jealous of me, oh, Parthy. I was a wretched little thing in the old days.
No, you were very beautiful, Flo. And all the men clustered round you at Papa's parties on the continent.
I remember. Most of the clusterers were bearded philosophers who hummed and hawed over my oddities and went away mumbling weighty conclusions.
Not all, Flo. There were young men, handsome young men.
I'm perfectly satisfied with my road. I haven't any regrets.
Of course not. Of course you haven't, Flo, darling.
There it is. Tea for three. A nice strong pot.
I said not in here, Aunt May. Oh. You know I've a cabinet meeting. Oh. Parthy, I beg you to excuse me. I'm at a crisis in my fortune.
All right, all right. We'll have it in my room, then. You mustn't mind her, Parthy, dear. She's not well.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, come in, Doctor. Come in. Parthy and I are about to be shown out. This way, Parthy and Nancy.
Oh, very well, but I must say I think it's a shame.
Sydney's here. I met him in the hall. Arthur Clough's coming up, too. Oh, here they are.
Hello, Florence, my dear.
Sydney, your message arrived 10 minutes since. Are you absolutely sure?
Certain. Headed from Palmerston himself in the lobby. Work began again on Netley Hospital a week ago. Our alternative plans weren't even looked at.
But I had his word of honor. This is a monstrous thing.
I expect he had other things to think about.
How can you find excuses for him when he gave his solemn word?
He isn't altogether to blame. The army medical nabobs played every trick in the pack. And Pam's position in the house is getting weaker every day. His government won't last a month.
Then there might be a chance with a champion in a new cabinet.
Florence, face the facts. We've lost the battle of Netley Hospital. It's over. Too late even for a rearguard action. But there are other battles of equal importance we can still win. So long as we don't squander ammunition on a lost cause.
Aye, that's sound sense you're talking, Sydney.
You're right, Sydney. But they shall never do this to me again. Never. You understand what this means? New tactics, new weapons, any weapons.
You've never been too scrupulous in your use of weapons, Flo.
But I've always had to use them at long range. From now on, it's point blank. The War Office is going to be reformed from top to bottom, a clean sweep. No more ambushes, no more pleading. Palmerston's government is falling. Good, let it fall. You shall be new Secretary for War, Sydney. And with you in the cabinet, we can't lose.
That's the spirit, Flo.
One moment. There's something else I learned this afternoon.
The Army Medical Chief, Dr. Andrew Smith, is retiring shortly on reaching the age limit.
Good. He was always sniping at us. Do you know who succeeds him in the position?
Yes. Yes, I do, John.
Well, who is it?
You made his acquaintance in the Crimea. Sir John Hall, KCB.
John Hall? The new chief of the Army Medical Department? That stupid, blundering, high-bound ox?
Aye, that's bad. Bad.
He can do us untold harm.
He can, if he is ever appointed.
He's next in seniority. It's a moral certainty.
Never, never.
You might remind the public of your old interpretation of his title. I recall you writing home and saying his KCB stood for Knight of the Crimean Burial Ground.
Ah, we might do some energetic canvassing for our own candidate.
We haven't got one yet.
There are several on the provisional list you made out. I have it here.
Tosh, we can't waste time finding a competitor until we've got Hall out of the way.
What do you propose? Sending Arthur Clough to the Opera House to assassinate him?
In any sensibly governed community, he would have been assassinated years ago. Fortunately, the means of eliminating him are not far to seek.
What's your plan, Florence?
I shall do what I threatened to do long ago. Arthur.
Yes?
Draft a letter for circulation to the press, using part of the text from my Crimean journal.
What part of the text, Florence?
Where it describes how Sir John Hall tried to starve my party and me into surrender by leaving us without food during our visit to the Crimean battlefields.
Crimean journal, check
pages. And there is something else. I shall want details of the occasion on which Sir John took part in the inquest on a soldier called Frederick White, who received 150 lashes. There was a big scandal about it. Sir John's verdict was that the man did not die from the effects of the flogging.
How do you propose to use that?
The press won't print it.
The newspapers don't get everywhere. Sydney shall circulate the facts in the lobbies at Westminster.
Florence, I can't do that.
You must. We have war, Sydney.
You asked me to formulate a whispering campaign aimed at smirching a man's character. That isn't honest campaigning, it's blackmail.
What did Sir John do to us? The end justifies the means.
I cannot do it, I tell you. There must be other ways.
Oh, there are. The old ways. To hedge, obstruct, procrastinate. Months of sapping and mining and perhaps ignominious defeat in the end. I'm tired of siege warfare. It's time we took Whitehall by storm. Don't you see? Of course it would be infamous if we stood to make personal gain from it. But the cause is so much bigger than we are. It's God's will working through us.
Oh, heaven knows I'm with you heart and soul, Florence. You're above party strife and face-seeking politicians, but this
There's no time for a campaign, Sidney. Hall is big enough and vicious enough to ruin us overnight. Who are we to question God's method?
You're right, Florence. You're always right. But don't talk glibly about God as though you and the British Empire worshipped the same deity.
We're all serving the same God, Sutherland.
Not Florence. Her conception of the Almighty is one of an omnipotent sanitary inspector. Eh, Florence?
He might be. He might well be. Sanitation first, then salvation. Come, gentlemen, to work. To work.
Thank you, Temperance. You might let Miss Florence know I'm here. Oh, I understand. I have to congratulate you, my dear.
Oh, thank you, sir. And the wedding went off lovely.
Good.
Miss Nightingale even had it put in the papers. Look.
Mm-hmm. Protégé of Miss Florence Nightingale wed. Echo of the Crimean campaign. Well, 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 Temperance. Imagine you a married woman, married by the grace of God and Miss Nightingale. Eh?
Oh, sir.
Well, you'll be leaving us now, I suppose.
Oh, no, sir. No, I couldn't leave her now. She's so busy.
Oh, don't be stupid, woman. If you wait to catch her in a slack period, you'll be too old to have any children. Cut and run now while the going's good.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Go and tell Miss Nightingale, Dr. Sutherland here, Temperance.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, have you made up your mind to tell her?
Aye, but I'm not liking the task.
Somebody must, and she'll take more notice of you than anyone.
Is Arthur any better today?
No, he's as ill as he can be. She's in there now, dictating to him.
You'd best stay with me. My general news is none too good. Sydney Herbert's in poor shape.
Oh,
He's on his way to see her. We'd best get Arthur out of the way first.
He's been looking worn out for months.
He'll have to rest. Mm.
Get that off immediately, Arthur. I'll finish the others later.
Yes, sir.
And what can I do for you, John?
Sydney's coming to see you this afternoon.
Indeed? Is he in any new difficulty?
He's very ill, Florence.
Ill?
He collapsed at a cabinet meeting this morning. He's been keeping himself going with brandy.
What does this mean?
He's got to relax.
Relax? Not?
He's no choice, Florence.
Rubbish! Talk of relaxing. They said I'd no choice for years on end, and I heeded them no more than a field of chirping crickets. But did I die?
You have enormous stores of nervous energy, and you feed on fanaticism. Sydney isn't a fanatic, just an ordinary individual subject to intolerable strain.
Has he asked you to plead for him?
No, he has not. He'd never tell you the truth. He's far too game. If you let yourself realize how difficult it was for a gentle creature like Sydney...
Difficult? Great heavens, Dr. Sutherland, how dare you talk to me of difficulty? Of course it's difficult to coerce men like Ben Hawes, the permanent secretary, and the whole crowd of jacks in office down there in Whitehall. But Sydney is giving away too easily. Even Gladstone is bullying him over the estimate. Difficulties? What baby talk is this? Haven't we learned to expect difficulties? Well, I'll deal with Sydney when he arrives. Is that all you've come about?
No, it isn't, Florence. We want Arthur Truss to take a holiday.
Clark, a holiday? Has everyone lost their senses?
It's not my idea, it's his wife's. She came round here to see me this morning. She's very concerned about him.
What's the matter with him? I've noticed nothing. Beyond an even more pronounced inclination to lay down his pen the moment my back is turned.
Florence, Herbert can speak up for himself, but I'm going to speak for Arthur. He's got to rest before it's too late.
So this is a conspiracy?
No, it's the dictates of common sense and nothing else. Open your eyes. What's an obsession to you is only an occupation to others.
You call what we are doing an occupation? The reform of the entire War Office and the establishment of Imperial Medical and Nursing Services an occupation?
We shall only lose ground if we kill off our front rank fighters. That's what's happening to Herbert and Clough in front of our eyes.
Listen to me, John Sutherland. I gave Arthur Clough the only useful job of his life. What was he when he came to me? A mourning poet, wrestling with his soul and making himself thoroughly miserable into the bargain.
What Arthur Clough does with his soul is nobody's business but his own. His wife is concerned with his bodily health.
Why didn't she come to me? I'm her cousin.
You aren't exactly renowned for hospitality to your family, Florence.
Very well. Kindly ask Arthur to step in here, Dr. Sutherland.
That won't help, Florence.
Do as I say.
Arthur, come in here a moment, old chap.
Here we are, assailed left and right by every gradient and petticoat done at that pestilential War Office. The whole structure of our reforms in the balance. And this is the time he wants to go gadding about in holiday garb. Ah, there you are, Arthur. They tell me you want a holiday.
Well, Mrs. Clough has suggested I need a change.
She's done more than that. She's been round here intriguing behind my back.
I won't have you say that, Florence. She spoke to me in confidence, and it was no part of my plan to make a scene about it.
You whispered it to one another. You both confined in Sutherland here. What else can you call such backstairs methods?
Oh, this is intolerable.
Please, I beg of you not to quarrel on my account.
Hold your tongue, Arthur. Florence, I insist that you apologize to me and give Arthur at least 2 months' leave of absence.
Later. I could go later.
Later might be too late. My advice as a medical man is to go now, at once.
But Florence may not wish me
to... Oh, don't make me responsible. Go, by all means, if you feel your health is in danger. I'm no longer in charge here, it seems.
But Florence... Oh. Very well, then. I'll go and pack my things.
I'm ashamed of you, Florence. That was cruel, callous, and most uncalled
for. Yes, Herbert. Do we have to have an encore?
I should appreciate it if you left me to see Sydney alone.
Aye, it'll give you more room to ply the lash.
You think I can afford to expend a champion like Sydney? We should be lost at Westminster without him.
We've got to face facts. He's nearer collapse than Arthur Clough.
Then we must compromise. John, I beg of you, leave him to me. Sydney will die of shame if we stand round here discussing his health in front of him.
that's true enough. Though why a man should be ashamed of collapsing through overwork, I don't know. I'll leave you to him, Flo. But remember, the warning light's showing.
Lord Herbert, miss.
Come and sit down, Sidney. Here.
Thank you, Florence.
They told me you weren't well.
Sorry, Flo. I'm letting you down badly, I'm afraid.
You've never let me down yet, Sidney.
I'm having to fight. All day, every day. Ben Hawes and his minions are at me like a pack of whippets. Even Gladstone.
Hawes, Gladstone, how can they win in the end? What faith have they got that will carry them over and through every obstacle in the path as we've been able to advance from the beginning?
I'm not being beaten by Gladstone and Hawes, Flo. I'm being beaten by an incurable disease.
Haven't I proved there's no such thing?
There isn't for you, Flo. But I'm made of softer clay.
It's that very passivity of spirit among you and the others that is losing the battle, Sidney. You mustn't accept conditions, but make them. How many times did they beseech me to rest? How many times did I obey them?
You have a single purpose, and by diverting every drop of heart's blood into the stream, you keep it moving. I can't do that, Florence. I have other demands upon such pitiful reserves as I possess.
Then you admit it. Throw every ounce of your strength into the fight, and you could ride out the storm. But no, you don't do that. You fritter away your energy on other seductions.
Seductions? Bless you, Flo. Would you call the simple demands of wife and home a seduction? Is the effort required to travel to and from the War Office a frivolous expenditure of energy?
If these things impede us, they are. If our campaigns are to be pushed into the background.
How can you say that, Flo, after all these weary years?
You talk as though you regret them.
You make me regret them when you humiliate me like that.
Humiliate you? Sidney, no, no, never. I see your difficulty.
You don't. You can't see anything but the whirlwind you ride upon. Oh, you'll get there all right. You people always do. But some of us can't stand the pace, and when we fall out, we're weak enough to expect a kind word, not a sneer.
Sidney, please. This is preposterous. You talk as though you were dying.
I am, Florence.
But you can't. Not now. Oh, God, not when we've nearly won.
I said you'd get there just the same. And you will. Without me.
I shan't, Sidney. I'm a woman. No matter how hard I work, how cleverly I scheme, I can't take your place. There's no one else. No one.
You'll soon find someone, but in the meantime, we'll go on much as we have. I said I was going to die. I didn't say retire.
You mean you'll carry on? Just for the final lap?
I can't continue as Secretary for War. It isn't fair to the country. It's not even fair to you. I shall have to exchange the Commons for the Lords.
But how?
In the House of Lords, I could keep my eye on the essentials, and I should be aware of everything said and done regarding us. Well?
It's better than nothing. A good deal better, I suppose. And God can't be so blind as to let us be beaten now.
I pray not.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought.
Come in, Clough, old fellow.
Arthur's come to say goodbye, Sidney. He's going on a holiday.
It's only to the Isle of Wight, Clough. I won't be long, I swear it.
Don't apologize, Arthur. Get really well before she hammers on the fetters again.
I hope your own health improves, my lord.
It must, Arthur. It must.
Well, goodbye then. For the present.
That's what you all think of it, don't you? Our work and its demands. Fetters.
Why, bless you, of course we do, Florence. But many a slave loves his chains. That fellow they found in the Bastille. He wept to go back, remember? We're just the same. There's no freedom for us now. We shouldn't know what to do with it anyway.
Oh, run along home for a day or two.
You know, Florence,
When I think of you and all of us working here, driven by you, a verse of Blake's runs through my head. It's his Jerusalem. Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire.
Yes. Blake had faith.
He might have been writing of you. John Sutherland's your spear, still sound. Clough is your bow, and the string's getting slack. I'm your sword. Going to sleep in your hand.
No, Sidney.
But you always drive your own chariot of fire right up to the throne of grace, and my word blow. What a flourish of trumpets they'll blow for you.
Let the work drive out bodily weakness, Sidney. Fight one more fight. The best and the last.
Aye, Lady in Chief. The last, Florence. The best. And the last.
This will be the book you are wanting, I believe.
Hmm? Oh, yes. Thank you. Don't go, John.
What is it then, Franz?
I did you a great wrong. I'm sorry, John. I'm deeply sorry.
I don't know to what you refer, woman.
Oh, yes, you do. They asked you to join the Sanitary Commission to the Mediterranean. And I quite made up my mind you had accepted.
Nonsense. I hadn't the faintest intention of going.
But you wanted to and didn't because you wouldn't leave me. It was very generous of you, John.
Look, will you stop worrying your poor headpiece over things that don't happen and leave me to make my own decisions?
Is it any wonder I misjudge people? Sidney out of action. Clough convalescing the Lord knows where. On May on the point of leaving. Don't you see, John? We're practically alone. And down there in Whitehall and Westminster, they're chipping away at our structures and we can't do a thing to stop them. How long will Sidney be in Belgium?
Depends on his progress. 4, 5 months, perhaps.
5 months? They can work havoc in that time.
Let Whitehall hang fire. The spade work's done. There's other spheres where there's no opposition. The Indian Medical Commission, infirmary reform, the St. Thomas's Nursery School. Oh, 101 of them. Mark time on these. They're just as important. Come, I'll lend a hand. What's this card?
A dossier. Nobody touches those but myself. Put it down.
Now, just a moment. Trainee report. April, conduct satisfactory. Application to study 93%. May, conduct satisfactory. Application to study 87%. June, conduct satisfactory. 4 evenings out, late reporting back on one occasion. Bless my soul, it reads like a secret police report.
That's exactly what it is.
Do you keep a day-to-day record of this young woman's movements?
Not that young woman particularly. I keep a record of all of them.
Great heavens.
I should be a fool to accept their examination results at face value, wouldn't I?
I can't understand you watching their private lives. Observed with male escort. It's fantastic.
How else can we tell a bad nurse from a good one? How are we to make selections when important positions are to be filled?
This card is starred in red ink. Does that mean this nurse is earmarked for the gallows?
That card is the record of Margaret Douglas, the girl who came here and begged me to enlist her. The red star means I am removing her from my list of trainees. She's downstairs now.
I give you up, Florence. Richelieu and Talleyrand were mere amateurs. Well, well, have the little wretch up and put her out of her misery. I'll not stay for it. I wouldn't know whether to laugh or cry.
You rang, miss?
There's a young woman in the hall, Temperance. Show her up, please.
Yes, miss.
Hadn't you better have Temperance search her for firearms?
Go back to your work and leave me to do mine.
Miss Margaret Douglas, Miss Nightingale.
That will be all, Temperance. You may sit down, Douglas. When do you anticipate getting married?
I...
Oh, come, come, don't fumble for words. Speak the truth.
I hadn't decided to get married at all, Miss Nightingale.
You hadn't? Then what do you propose to do with that wretched young man who spends most of his waking hours supporting the brickworks opposite your quarters? You find that corner abominably draughty in the autumn.
I can't help it if he won't abandon his suit.
Of course you can help it. A man wouldn't show that much importunity unless he was quite confident of eventual triumph.
Oh, Miss Nightingale, I told you when I was here before that I hadn't any attachment.
You most certainly did. It didn't take long to uncover that falsehood, did it?
It wasn't a falsehood. Edwin, this young man had informed me he was sailing for India the day I called on you.
Do you think I can afford to waste my time engaging and disengaging nurses on that amateur rebound?
But he didn't go. It wasn't my fault. I didn't even know he was still here.
You knew on the 23rd of May last. On that day he called at the training school for you. That was 3 months ago, unless my calendar lies.
But my work...
And that day your standard of work has steadily declined. Look at this. 93% good. 87% fair. 72% poor. 67% a downright waste of time. Miss Douglas, my advice to you is to marry this misser of Indian steam packets. Marry him at once and sail to Lahore or Delhi or Timbuktu with him. But stop wasting my time.
Oh, this isn't fair. My work at St. Thomas's placed me among the first half dozen.
Quite until the moon came out.
And then somebody began spying.
Spy? Do you imagine I have to apologize for spying? I'm at war, woman. At war with dirt, disease, and incompetence. And believe me, Miss Douglas, I'll employ any means calculated to secure me victory.
Florence, I must speak to you a moment alone.
Dr. Sutherland, this is unpardonable. I'm giving an interview.
I can't help it. It's vitally important. Young lady, I beg you to excuse us. Florence, your brother-in-law, Sir Harry Verney, has been here. He has news, important news.
Very well. Wait in the lobby, Douglas. I'll send for you later.
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
Now, what is it?
Florence, it's Sidney Herbert. Poor fellow, he...
Sidney. No. Not dead.
I'm afraid so, Florence. This morning, at his home, Wilton, I tried to tell you how bad it was, Florence. I knew he'd returned from Spa, but I kept hoping and hoping, and you had so much to do. Poor laddie. Verney tells me his last words were of you, Florence. They caught something about the work, yours and his, being unfinished. He wanted to die at Wilton. I told him at Spa there was no hope.
I killed him, didn't I?
Oh, no, Florence. No, no. He lived for you.
I killed him just the same. He wouldn't have gone on fighting another day if I hadn't driven him.
Rest wouldn't have saved him, Florence. His disease was incurable, and he knew it.
He was such a gallant, gentle creature. And they hunted him like a stag. But it was I who drove him back into the chase, over and over again. When he came here and told me, John, it all seemed quite unimportant, as though he had a headache or... This is God's punishment. And it's more than I can bear.
Stop accusing yourself, Florence. What's done is done. The laddie's gone to his rest. You didn't really know how ill he was.
But you tried.
I told you, but you couldn't hear me. You put the work first, and you did right to put it first. What's one life to the thousands you've had a hand in saving?
John.
Yes?
I can't go on any longer.
What fool's talk is this? Sidney would never believe it of you.
I can't, I tell you. What has this struggle done to me? It's made me a tyrant who drives my dearest friends out of the house and the dearest of all to his death. Well, it can't go on. God doesn't believe in us anymore.
That's a blasphemy. It's God driving us, and if some of us fall out, that's God's will as well.
The shadow of death is on this room, John, and I've been touched by it. I shall retire to St. Thomas's Hospital and give up the struggle.
You do no such thing, woman. You purge yourself of this whining guilt and go up against Whitehall and Westminster with all guns firing. If we retreat now, we freeze the work of Herbert's committees. We'll use Sidney's death as a rallying cry. And by the living God, we'll do the same. Rouse up, woman. There's champions aplenty in the House and the opposition. There's Harry Verney, there's Galton, there's Clough.
Clough is going to die, John, just like Sidney. I can feel it.
Heaven, you've wrestled death and thrown him time and again. Now you talk as though you were about to make common cause with
him. Perhaps I am. What of it? Who is there to regret, and why should anyone mourn a murderess?
Florence.
That nurse, John. Nurse Douglas. We must get her back. I dismissed her. She'll kill herself because of me. That woman, Temple. The woman in the lobby. Bring her here at once. At once.
But I can't, miss. She's gone.
All right, Temple. Right, Florence. Weep. You're just a child again. And it'll do you a power of good.
Have you read this nonsense, John?
What's the matter now?
According to this particular periodical, I've been dead almost a week.
That paper was published 10 days ago, and Sir Harry Verney has already written demanding an apology.
I don't give two straws about the rubbish they've written here. It's the correspondence the report has occasioned. The week before last, I was supposed to be dying, and a quack here offers to cure me of spinal paralysis in 10 days.
He ought to be in my shoes for an hour or two.
I don't find anything at all amusing in the fact that the entire country is swarming with charlatans of this type. I shall write a strong letter to the medical council.
You're getting old and feeble. 20 years ago, you'd have had the man burned at the stake. Are you ready for your interview?
Who is there to be seen?
A matron from India. She says she's got some interesting report, but won't give her name.
Then she won't get an audience. Who else?
Deputation from the Committee of the League for the Establishment and Extension of Women's Rights.
Ring the bell. I won't keep them very long. Establishment and Extension of Women's Rights. Little D.D.
Good God. What extraordinary clothes. I imagine that's what's called a bloomer suit.
Our appointment was for 2 o'clock. It is now nearly 3, sir. Here is our card.
Miss Bellum and Miss Crute, representing the committee.
Thank
of
you,
the...
Dr. Sutherland. Be seated, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. You wrote for an interview on the 21st of last month.
We wrote 4 times in all, Miss Nightingale.
Your movement is quite unconnected with nursing.
Oh, quite unconnected, Miss Nightingale.
Then why were you so anxious to see me?
We consider we have a right to your moral support in our campaign.
Is that all?
No, Miss Nightingale, this is far from being all. We realize you're a busy woman, one of Britain's few busy women, if one excludes the millions of drudges condemned to devote their entire life to the slavish service of the opposite sex. But we felt also that you represented an ideal of womanhood as it might well be practiced in every civilized country, that you have been, and still are, a living example of what a woman can do if given the opportunity.
Any woman.
Any woman, Miss Nightingale.
Many of the committee felt that you were hostile to our cause, Miss Nightingale, but I couldn't believe it. I read and heard too much about you, and I volunteered to come and see you and ascertain once and for all whether it is true that...
Well?
Whether it is true that you didn't agree to women having equal rights.
How do you propose to win those rights?
By ceaseless agitation, Miss Nightingale, the same way as you won yours.
That is less than a half-truth, young woman. Agitation, certainly I agitated, but first I did something practical. I served in the Crimea.
That is known all over the world, Miss Nightingale. There is no Crimea today. But we are fighting to establish the right of entry into other spheres beyond nursing. And to that end, we must advertise ourselves and gain popular support.
If you would grace our petition with your signature, Miss Nightingale.
Petition? Do you think you can conquer an ageless tradition with a scrap of paper?
Magna Carta was a scrap of paper, Miss Nightingale.
Signed at the sword point, backed by force. Will your document frighten anyone?
But you agree with us in principle.
I do not. You violate every principle I ever cherished. It was never part of my policy to wrest the helm from the hands of the men. If women had controlled the cabinet when I instituted my earliest reforms, I should have failed on every count. Failed miserably and ignominiously.
Miss Nightingale, I feel...
No. Cannot turn yourselves inside out. The men like to flatter themselves that they are superior in intellect, that they are the lords of creation, and if it pleases them, let them hold on to that belief. It keeps them quiet, and we can get what we want by the exercise of the arts nature gave us for the purpose.
Some of us, Miss Nightingale, are too proud to employ those subtleties.
And some of us would sooner fail than employ them.
Young woman, in those hideous garments, you would employ them in vain on all but the blind and the mentally deficient.
Come, Cara, we are wasting our time.
They call you a great woman. Oh, what fools! How could a great woman say a spiteful thing like that?
No, now, come, Cara, we don't agree. Let us leave it.
No, let her hear the truth. I'm not afraid of her. Do you think I enjoy wearing these masculine clothes? Do you think I don't like pretty things like any other woman?
My child, control yourself.
Don't you? Can't you see? This is a challenge.
Clara, please.
You don't really belong to us at all. Not anymore. I shall never believe in anything again. Never, never, never.
She's young. The young feel things. They've so much to learn. Good afternoon, Miss Nightingale.
They've left their precious petition.
That was a pretty scene, to be sure. I couldn't help overhearing. You shouldn't excite yourself over these trifles. Why see these people at all if they upset you?
They don't all upset me, John. But I am tired now. I should like to sleep a while.
You do that, Florence. I'll draw the curtains.
Thank you, John. No more visitors. Go home.
Aye. Presently. Presently.
Tired. So tired.
Florence.
Sydney?
Yes, Florence.
Why have you come again today?
Because you needed me, Florence.
You're angry with me, Sydney.
No.
Disappointed, then. You must be, or you wouldn't have come.
I said I'd come when you called. I always have, Florence.
I didn't call, Sydney. I ought to have long since, but I didn't. It was wrong of me.
You did call, Florence, without even knowing it. Only you can bring me here. You know that.
Sydney, that young woman, I was cruel and spiteful.
There's no real harm done, Florence. Not as long as you know it.
But it must have hurt you, Sydney. I'm always hurting you.
No, Florence. You only hurt your image of me. That's all I am, you know. Nothing real.
You're very real to me, Sidney.
I'm glad. That makes me very proud.
Oh, Sidney, how can you be proud of me? A stupid, arrogant, obstinate old woman. You must despise me for all my bad judgments and mistakes. I feel so wretched.
You mustn't. That's why I came. You can't help making a few bad judgments in all you attempt. You'll go on making them. Bless you. How many did we make once upon a time? Don't mind the mistakes. It isn't those that make you wretched. It's the...
Tell me.
You must learn just to yield a little. An inch here, an inch there. Aim for your old standards, but don't hit so hard when others fall short of them. Keep adjusting your perspectives, Flo. Nobody can do that better than you if you'll only let yourself. Give. Give slowly, gracefully, and graft your policy onto the new world. It's such a different world from ours, though, and can't be forced into the iron hoop you sometimes try and use. Be firm, Flo, but pliant. Keep your splendid mind alert and open to new things. Not all of them are greedy and disruptive. Above all, be kind, Flo. Kind to the young and eager. Laugh at their enthusiasm and intolerance, but love them secretly for having these qualities. Remember always that it was these things you built upon. And please God, are still building.
And is that all?
That's all, Flo. Nothing else matters. Nothing at all.
Are you going now, Sidney?
Yes, Florence, I must.
Why don't you always stay by me? I could do so much more.
That cannot be, my dear. I belong to the past. You are the present and the future. But I'm never far away, you know.
It'll be all right, Sidney. I swear it.
I know. Oh, come in.
Miss Nightingale?
Oh, come in, my dear. Pull the curtains aside, would you? Oh, what lovely sunshine. They said there were no more visitors. I've been having a rest. Such a refreshing rest. Now, sit there, my dear, facing me. I like to see my visitors.
You don't even recognize me.
I do. You are the undisciplined nurse.
Right, first time.
I remember everything. It was the day, poor Sidney, you went to India to be married. Oh, such a long time ago.
I thought you'd like to see this.
Statistics? Why, you've been nursing. You came to your senses. You didn't get married.
Oh, no, Miss Nightingale. I didn't come to my senses. I did get married, and I was very, very happy. But it didn't last very long. Edwin died of a tropical disease a year after we got there.
Poor child.
He died in a hospital. They weren't very good hospitals then. So I thought I'd stay and make them better. And that's what you would have done, wouldn't you?
Tell me everything.
I had a dreadful struggle to get on the staff. It was almost as though...
Yes?
Almost as though they'd never heard of you, Miss Nightingale.
Fools, fools.
But it's different now. There's several of your girls in that hospital and dozens in Bombay, Calcutta and Karachi.
I want to hear more. You must stay to tea, to supper. John! John!
Did you call me, Florence? I'm afraid I dropped off to sleep. Bless my soul. How did she get in?
She happens to be a matron with an analytical survey of tropical diseases in her reticule. Shame on you, John Sutherland. Go to sleep again. No, no. First ring for tea. This visitor is taking tea with me. And then... No. First, you must excuse me, will you? Something important. Those women's rights people, I want their address.
21 Temple Street West.
Here you are. Ask Sir Harry to send it round to them. I've signed it. It can't do any harm.
Are you out of your mind? After all you said to...
Take it, and don't argue with me, you old dunderhead. See that Sir Harry sends it off today.
All right, I'll see to it. You're a silly, vacillating old woman. There's only one thing keeps me here dancing attendance on you, m'lady. It's the pleasure of being too old to care what I say to you.
He's sweet, isn't he? I remember him so well. Dear, faithful John. Dying in harness.
He isn't so frightfully old.
They're all fearfully old. All but me, child. And I'll never be old. Never, never. Because every now and then, young things like you come back to me. Always just when I need you. And just when I think the torch is going out, it flares up again, right in my face, and makes me see how worthwhile it's been and is being. How very, very worthwhile.
In The Spinster of South Street by R.F. Delafield, adapted for radio by Cynthia Pugh, the part of Florence Nightingale was played by Rachel Gurney, Lord Herbert by Austin Trevor, and Dr. Sutherland by Duncan McIntyre. The rest of the cast was as follows. Aunt May, Hester Peyton Brown. Arthur Clough, Michael Spice. Temperance, Elizabeth Morgan. Lord Palmerston, Norman Claridge. Parthenope Nightingale, Margaret Ward. Margaret Douglas, Polly Murch. Dr. Smith, James Thomason. Peter Grillage, John Gray. Miss Crute, Barbara Mitchell. Miss Bellum, Sheila Grant. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Betty Davis.